Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network coming to you live. This is Glenn Greenidge coming out of New York City and Henrietta Byrd. How are you? Henrietta, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Okay, we've got our mic open. She's on. She'll be back to us momentarily. All right, so.
Can you hear me?
Hey, there she is. What's up?
I'm here. Happy Black History Month and happy Super Bowl Day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of happenings happening.
Okay.
And let me get to the read our go to the home page and read the International Black Summit Declaration. So the Declaration of International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. New York City, February 3rd, 2013. Chicago, Illinois, February 3rd, 2013. Above, below, within, and around, a moment of silence, please. Thank you. So we have 718-371. Would you like to say anything on this Super Bowl Sunday? Okay. Well, welcome to the call. Put you back on mute. And so one of the things, you know, of course, this is Super Bowl. This is Super Bowl Sunday. And this is also the first Sunday of Black History. And so one of the things that we want to speak about is what are the relationships and what is it about Black history and football? Well, I had a long thought about that, and I was wondering what I could say about it and what would make a difference. But the bottom line is, there's a lot of Black folks in football. A lot of great Black folks. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to kind of speak about is really the game and what Black people have contributed to the game. Because I think that they've attributed quite a bit to the game. But rather than tell you some of the names of the people who are great because we didn't have to spend the whole show talking about them. What I want to do is take a moment and talk about what football is in terms of how it relates to other professional sports. And the thing that, you know, somebody had asked me, well, what do you think is the best sport? And when you think about what's involved, and you think about the athletes, and you think about the conditioning, the smarts, the, you know, all of the things that contribute to a good football team. And, you know, certainly working together, certainly being a good athlete is a place to start. But it's really beyond that, because you have to be, I think that football is the ultimate team sport. And so what do I mean by that? I mean that you have to have good physical ability. You also have to have good mental and thinking ability. And you want to be able to look at that and work together as a team. You know, there was one movie that I was watching, and to me, it described the game probably the most effectively that I've been able to visualize. And that is that the team is a wall, and especially your defense. And if you don't take care of your responsibility, there's a weakness in the wall. Another team can exploit that. And if you're consistently a weakness, then, you know, then the team can basically have its way with you. So it's kind of interesting when you think about it and you look at it and you look at what does it take to be a championship football team. You've got 11 players that have to be all working together, offensively or defensively. So you've got, and you've got really three teams. So you've got the offense, the defense, and special teams. And so you've got to be able to excel in all three of those areas. So you're talking about in the neighborhood of probably about 50 players. And then when you look at the National Football League, that's one of the areas where you see there's a lot of black athletes that are part of that conversation. Now, they're not all black. There are no all black teams. But when you look at a consistent contribution and in terms of who's making a difference, you're definitely looking at a majority of people of color who are in that conversation. So that's what I wanted to say about that. So as we watch the football, the Super Bowl, and look at the extravaganza that's involved with it, because it really is the premier sports event of the year. The networks and people spend probably the most money. The rings and the champions that are had there, I wouldn't say they're the most glorified, but certainly quite glorified, to say the least. So you've got a real he's got a real interesting makeup of things and people that are involved in this conversation. Absolutely. So, as I said, part of tonight is the honoring of these folks who contribute and who can't say get a piece of the action, but they are, you know, a lot of the football players are well paid. Not like any other sport is not. But I've actually, you know, that's maybe something that we can do a future study, take a look and see the degree of the athletes and the black athletes and what they actually do. And the other thing is what they actually do with their money. Because I know part of the, when they come into the league, they actually are asked, they have a camp where they actually get financial advice about how to invest and so forth. Not sure if they listen. That's another conversation. But certainly the amount of money that flows through their hands. And again, remember that their expected life in football is, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years. Now, you know, we've got tonight part of the Super Bowl conversation is that we've got Ray Lewis has spent 17 years doing that, and that's a rarity. None of the people that came in his year are still playing. Brett Favre had a legacy similar to that as well. So, I mean, you've got people who last in this sport, and then you've got people who are just, you know, come in 3 or 5 years, make a couple million dollars, and keep it moving. So it's an interesting sport. I think it's much more demanding than some of the other sports. I'd like to say, and of course, you know, I can't really speak this knowledgeably because I don't know. But I'd like to think that football is probably the ultimate team sport because even hockey is dependent on the skill set, but the physical ability to do what needs to be done is not quite the same. So, a little bit about football, a lot about what is it that you want to talk about Black history. I'm actually going to talk a little bit about what I think that our young people should know about their Black history, because that's an area that seems to come up quite a bit, and I think that that's something that the school system is not doing a great job with. So we'd love to hear from you. Got some folks in the chat room. We've got some folks online. If you'd like to speak and contribute and talk about your, what figures in Black history do you think that our young people should spend a little bit more time on, and that that they should know about. And I know for me, there's a couple names that come out, that ring out, and you know, I'll talk a little bit about most of them. But certainly, I always have to defer to Marcus Garvey. I think that he is one of the most underrated people, probably now in the whole Black history conversation. Because a lot of people think of him
quite frankly, is a lunatic. Which is a shame, because I think that he's one of the primary visionaries. And excuse me as I am getting some honey mustard out for my my fish sticks and for my my fish cakes, which are part of my my Super Bowl festivities for tonight. I've got some honey and pineapple mustard, and I'm using that with my, I bought some fish sticks, which were always a favorite of mine when I was a little kid coming up, and my mother used to make them. But for some reason, I said, well, you know, in the theme of a Super Bowl, let's do something like that. And then I made my, you know, world famous fish cakes, which are very scrumptious. Good. Okay. Enough of that. So, love to hear from you. If you'd like to speak, press 1, and I recognize you and get you in there, and let's make it happen. Of course, you know, everybody remembers Martin Luther King for his contribution. These are good. Oh, my goodness. All right, I'm going to have to put them down. Excuse me. I just enjoyed that. That was wonderful. And the other thing I wanted to speak about is really something that people really, I kind of wonder where what people think or where they think or if they think that that should be part of it or not. But I include the conversation of the Bloods and the Crips. And, you know, everybody knows about the gang banging and the violence and all of that. But a lot of people don't realize that the C in Crips stands for community. And if you begin to look at and understand what was the state of America, of Black America at that time, the state of Black America was this. The Black Panther Party was assassinated by the LA police and whomever else that was involved in it, probably CIA, FBI, etc. Because it was very scary at that time for Black people to walk around with guns. I mean, it's just the way it was, or is. And when you think about it, you think about the fact that they were eradicated, the Black Panther Party, and that's another group. When you think about it, that's another group that is worth spending some time with our young people around. The Black Panther Party, a lot of people don't realize, the Black Panther Party actually started the
breakfast, school breakfasts. That was one of their legacies. Now, I mean, you know, think about it. You know, they don't get a lot of credit for it, but one of the things that they realized and saw was that, that young inner-city black youth were coming to school hungry, and you can't learn when you're on an empty stomach. It's real hard. So that was one of the programs that they had put in place. But anyway, so that, those avoid the Black Panther Party had been preaching and talking about economic, the basic things. They talked about having the right to fair and decent housing, the education system. You know, a lot of the basic things that we look at today is part of what they stood up for. They also stood up for not allowing police to come in and act any old way in our community. So, I mean, so when you look at it and you think about it, there were several different aspects of community that the Black Panther Party really stood for. And so with this void, Crips were actually organized to really support the community and support each other because there's a lot of violence going on and there's a lot of cliques. And kind of protecting your community. Now, one of the documentaries that I share with them when I look at the Bloods and the Crips, when you don't think about it, and a lot of people don't realize this, but the Bloods and the Crips were really, when they had a beef, they would fight fist to fist. That's how they would fight. And what happened is one day, and who was telling the story was Monster Cody, who actually wrote a book. Who, when you look at his, read his book, you really get a sense of what the climate was like, and that in order to survive, you have to make a choice. You got to make a choice of, are you going to be part of the gang and have some protection or not? And in most cases, the smart move, or as they would say, the smart money was on getting into a gang so that you have somebody backing you up. So so in fact, that was what he did. And of course, so he was actually witness to this first the situation. And I call it this first situation because that was the place where the first life was taken. As I said, they would solve their differences. They would fight physically, and nobody would bring guns in and so on and so forth. It so happened that some guy from another neighborhood moved into Monster Cody's neighborhood, his hood, as they say. And the fight broke out, and this kid, young man, went back to his house and got a gun and shot the Blood that was part of this fight, because there was two of them that were fighting it out. And so when the Bloods came to get whoever it was, they said, well, listen, give up who it was. And they're like, well, we don't know who it is. We actually don't know who this kid is. And we don't know where he lives. And he's not part of our group, our gang. And so what occurred with that is that so the Bloods didn't believe them. They thought that they were protecting them. And so they retaliated, and they shot somebody else in the Crip community. And
And so that's what escalated this whole shooting. Now, one of the things that I share with the young people, which I think is very interesting, is they didn't start out to be killing each other. They actually started to protect each other and were a community-based organization that just went south and went very, very, you know, went in the wrong direction and weren't able to pull it back. So, again, good intentions, but it's more than just good intentions. You got to be able to follow up and manage things. The other person of interest that I love speaking to the young people about is, as I said, Marcus Garvey. And the reason I like Marcus Garvey, because he spoke about Pan-Africanism. He is the original person that spoke about the possibility and the opportunity of black people pulling their monies together and working together as a community, as a unit. And he wasn't talking about just Americans, but he was looking at it from a global standpoint. He was the first person to have the global conversation for black people and what would the, and consolidating our economic value and power. I mean, that's what he talked about. So when you think about it, that is pretty amazing. Back in the 1920s, that a black man would actually pull together and had his own luxury liners that would take you back to Africa. He actually ended up getting about three or four ships. It was grossly mismanaged by somebody that he trusted. Basically had him pay three or four times the amount of money that he should have paid for the ships. So, but, you know, very entrepreneurial, you know, very global, a very global conversation is who Marcus Garvey was. So, you know, those are a couple of the conversations that I'll share with you. So again, Marcus Garvey, the Bloods and the Crips, and what they contributed to our history, and of course the Black Panther Party. So when I look at black history and look at what I would want our young people to know about, find out about, those would be some of the critical areas. And there's some others, but I'm going to let Henrietta share a little bit up in terms of that. Henrietta, who would you say are the most important people in black history that you would want to have young people, our young black community, know about?
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, Glenn, because when I was thinking about the Super Bowl and I did a little research about black African Americans in the Super Bowl, and I read this interesting story about Doug Williams. Do you remember him? He was the first black quarterback.
Absolutely.
To win a Super Bowl, and it was 25 years ago.
And he played for Washington D.C. for the I forget the name of the team now. The Redskins, the Washington Redskins, and I got to tell you, I thought that how they treated him was terrible. But anyway, so you go ahead and tell and let us know what a little bit more about that.
Yeah. He the interesting part of this story, the interesting part of the story that I read was that they were sending him a mail, and in the mail there was rotten watermelon and all kinds of nastiness that he would receive on a regular basis when he was on the, you know, I'm trying to remember what team it was. I don't remember the team.
Washington Redskins.
It was the Redskins, but it seemed like, is that where he was at first? Is that where it was?
Yeah.
But anyway.
He actually came up from Grambling. So he was a quarterback at one of the black historical colleges, and had his experience under the coach who was one of the most winningest coaches in college football.
Oh, I know you're talking about. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not the night before. That's a different story. But one of the stories I read was that he asked to be traded. And the coach was going to trade him to the Raiders. And, you know, he asked the coach said, I'm trying to work out something with the Raiders. And then he said, he changed his mind. Not him, but the coach changed his mind. The coach changed his mind and said, I don't think we should do this. And he said he just, you know, Doug Williams just got mad and stormed out the room. But the next season they started it. You know, they started it. And the night before they won the game, the Super Bowl, he had a toothache. And he said while everybody else was relaxing and, you know, just having fun and going to the secret hotel or whatever they do, that he was at the dentist's office getting a root canal and in all kind of pain. All kinds of pain the night before. It's a real good, you know, kind of human interest story. And he said he woke up the next morning and all the pain was gone. He hadn't had much sleep, you know, but he went on, you know. He went on and won that game. And they even talk about this, the play, the special play that he did to win that game. But it's been 25 years since then. And said that he, you know, he doesn't really look at himself as a trailblazer. He doesn't think of it that way. But he, you know, because in Obama's speech, you know, he listened to the speech, and then someone else who put his name in with other great people, and he said he doesn't really think of himself that way, but he, you know, he said it's just the grace of God that got him through all of the racism and the hatred and the different things that he had to go through, you know.
When you think about it, you're right. He was the first successful and the most successful black quarterback, and he kind of made it okay for black quarterbacks because there was a whole thing about black quarterbacks and that they weren't as good as the white quarterbacks.
Right.
And he broke that because he actually was the MVP. For that Super Bowl,
So not only
did he demonstrate his superior skill, but also ended up being the MVP. And the thing, but the thing that still sticks in the craw of my throat is that the next year they traded him.
Okay.
The very next year. Now, how do you trade a quarterback that took you to the Super Bowl, that made that was the MVP of the Super Bowl, and you just discard
him
like a
like
piece of dirt.
Right, right. Whew, America, you know?
Yeah.
It's just America.
Yeah.
Right. It's really, really something. Really, really something. And it's interesting, and I just, you know, because it didn't, you know, like, and I shouldn't really say America because most of the people who are that way, they are not native. Okay?
Yeah.
It came from somewhere else. They came from somewhere else, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's really interesting. That's why I like Lincoln so much. You know, I love that movie. I really, really like that movie. I think folks should see it, you know, because it talks a lot about, you know, that 13th Amendment and the fight and the this, you know, and really, you know, black folks had so much to do with it. They had so much just, you know, to do with the people who had the clout to persuade everybody else, you know.
Yeah.
It's really good, but Doug Williams is the one that I read about and the one that I was like, oh, this is such a great story. And it was 25 years ago, which is the year Henri was born. So I was like, oh, my goodness, I didn't even pay attention to it, you know.
Yeah,
I remember watching it because I was very pregnant. But I do remember watching the game, you know, because that's what you do. You watch it, and especially if there's a black anything, you watch it, you know, you watch it. And but I just thought that was a great, great story. And he's coaching at a college now.
Yeah, he's a college coach.
Yeah.
You know, it's you talk about some of the unsung heroes. You know, one of the players that I always loved that ended up having this great commercial was Mean Joe Green. That Coca-Cola commercial where they have him, this little white young boy, this little kid, you know, this is big, 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 mean Joe Green, you know, the defensive back and you know, this killer defense. They were called the Steel Curtain. And they used to lock down offenses. But anyway, the Steel Curtain comes out and he's got, you know, dirt and, you know, and had a hard day. And this kid offers him this Coca-Cola and says,
okay,
you know, he says, no, no, you have it, Joe. And he's like, no, you have it.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
And the kid says, no, you have it, Joe. And he takes it, and he gulps. He's so thirsty, he gulps the whole thing down. And then he takes and throws his jersey to the kid.
Yeah.
The kid is now elated because he's got Mean Joe Green's jersey.
Right, I remember that commercial.
And, you know, and matter of fact, that was about 10 years after he played. And so... when I look at the Super Bowl commercials, that probably was, for me, is the top Super Bowl commercial.
I haven't watched them. I saw one that Oprah did for the, well, it's her voice. She didn't do the commercial. It was about the troops, the men and women who served the country. And just now, on today, she's narrating this commercial. And I'm trying to see whose commercial was it. Oh, I forgot. just had quit. But Beyonce did Super Bowl, did the halftime show, and it was really good. With Destiny's Child, with the other two parts of Destiny's Child, so all three of them were on. So that was nice. So history, you know, it's like more and more African-American history.
Well, you know, there's a couple things I want to say. And the first thing is that if you look at any serious movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, that really is earth-shattering, like one comes to mind is Rudy. I don't know if you ever saw Rudy. But if you look, and I challenge our listeners, look at some major movies that are happening. Normally in the movie, who ignites the institution of the main character,
uh-huh.
is somebody black.
Okay.
You know, so I invite our listeners just to notice that and look at movies where something gets transformed, that gets that takes the person from night to day and just kind of shakes them up and says something to them, riveting, that has them like get back on track and kind of take a reality check of wherever they were.
Right.
So we're getting those positions and that kind of included in the scripts, but when you look at reality, I think that really is who we are as a people. That's what we do. We inspire people. We have people get the possibility of who they could be and what what's available.
There are two characters in Lincoln that are key characters to the story, and you don't really pay a lot of attention to them. You just normally don't. But when I watched it a second time. And, I'm always looking for the black people in a movie. But there was the person who took care of Lincoln's wife. And, she was not her slave, but the person who was assigned to her, you know, to take care of her. And then there was another person who was the house person. For did we talk about this? It seems like we talked about this before, but he wasn't the Speaker of the House, but he might have been. He was like the head of the Republican Party at the time, I think.
Right, right.
And he's the one, and you know, he was in a relationship with this woman, and so you know, they wanted him to say something that he didn't really believe, you know. But he was in love with this woman. I mean, she slept in bed with him. He didn't go make her come at night or anything. They were a couple, which, of course, nobody knew, you know.
Well, nobody knew. Well, his thing was that he wanted equal rights to black people. And they weren't ready for that conversation. His name was Thaddeus. Thaddeus something was his name. And you're right. He was. And I want the listeners to recall, at that point in time, the Republican Party was the Liberal Party.
Oh, okay.
And the Republican Party was actually the party that most of the post-slavery blacks registered into.
Right.
So the Republican Party was the party that was interested in moving the country and black people forward inside of their conversation.
Right, because my parents talked about being Republican in the 50s and, you know, up the 60s. They were not the 60s, but the 50s, I think, that they were Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they're having a blackout right now at the Super Bowl. There's a blackout, a power outage, I should say.
Somebody's head's gonna roll.
Okay. Somebody. But it's so nice to, you know, I mean, just can you imagine that there was a time where we wouldn't even be able to talk about accomplishments of black people, like. They would not have been. It's like we can talk about any subject now, and there are black people involved in it. I don't care what industry it is. I don't care what it used to be. There are just African American people in every facet of life, running things, you know, creating things, developing things, just. So, you know, it's interesting to hear, you know, how people feel about certain things, but in reality is we are involved in everything, and we've gotten to the point now if they don't, they, you know, that word in quotations, don't let us do certain things, we do it ourselves. We created ourselves. And that's what, to me, that's transformation. You know, you don't have to wait to get the crumbs off of the table. You know, you can create it yourself. Look at all the success stories. Look at a Tyler Perry, you know. Just create it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All of the phenomenal people that we have. I remember myself in the 80s, I was the first African-American that had ever been hired by a beauty school, by this beauty school chain in Huntsville, Alabama. And that was in the 80s. First one.
Interesting.
And it was just as interesting as everything else. Everybody came to see this black person. You know, who is this black person? Who is this black person here from Chicago? And who would move to Huntsville from Chicago? You know, and people came from, I can't even tell you how many counties, just to see this black person.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, so we are doing wonderful things. You know,
I want to go back to that Lincoln movie.
Okay.
One of the things that moved me was when they were up for that vote, the 14th Amendment vote, and they actually allowed the black people to come up in the balcony.
Yes. Oh, and that was my favorite scene.
Oh, my goodness. I was just moved to tears.
I know.
Just to be in that conversation of being included after we've been shut out for so long.
Yes.
And after all of the demonstrations of worthiness and support for our country, that we were still having to deal with this fight.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to be quite honest with you, I'm actually surprised that it got as many nominations for the Academy Award as it did. I didn't expect it because I thought that this was something that was just too close too close to the vest about the reality of this country and what we're about and what we have to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just pretty.
That was a great. I mean, it was just really.
Now, Henrietta, who would you say in Black history are some of the important names that you would, if you had some young people, that you would let them know about?
In Black history,
young people.
I probably there's so many people. Let me just think. I would want them to know about the people who the children who did the Children's March in Alabama. You know, there was a Children's March in Alabama when all of the everything was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to do this march, and there's a documentary on it. And you can order it, or people who are listening can order it. But it's called The Children's March. And there was something that people who were involved in civil rights wanted to accomplish. And they had gotten to a point, and this is my understanding of the story, so it might not just be fact by fact. They had gotten to a point where they didn't want people to be arrested or whatever. So the children marched because they couldn't lock the children up.
Right. But didn't they end up locking some of the children up anyway?
I don't remember. I'm sure they did. That would not surprise me at all because that was just the consciousness at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
But what's so interesting was the children wanted to do it, you know. There was an idea. Somebody developed the idea, and they had put a law, you know, some kind of law out that the teachers were not supposed to let the children out of class and this and this and this. And, of course, everybody, the teachers just found somewhere to go at the time that the children were supposed to leave. And they acted like they didn't see them leave.
Yep.
And the children came from everywhere. So I would actually like to talk to people who were, you know, a part of that children's march. I would really love to find someone that we could interview who was a part of that march. And I might be able to if we call the people we were in contact with in Birmingham last year.
In Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah,
that would be wonderful.
Birmingham last year. This mm-hmm. year we are going to Ottawa. The International Black Summit Talk Show Network is in Ottawa, Canada, and it is August 2nd through the 5th. And we are so looking forward to going to Ottawa. We invite everyone to go to blacksummit.org and register for a prerequisite. Email, say, I need a prerequisite in my city so I can go to the summit in August. And we will send a crew,
mm-hmm.
a prerequisite crew to your space. And there are some, you know, there are some things that have to be in place, but just contact us. And so you are ready to go on August the 2nd. Or you can go to Ottawa and you can do the prerequisite there on August 2nd. So either way it goes, just register for the summit this year and join this wonderful conversation that is transforming Black people everywhere. People of African descent, I should say. People of African descent everywhere are being transformed through the International Black Summit conversation. So I'm Henrietta, and Glenn is on, and we're here every Sunday, 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and this is Black History Month. So, you know, we, what part of the of what's available in the summit is acknowledgement, praise, and celebration of who we are as a people and the contribution we are to the universe. So that's my favorite part, Glenn, of what's available in the summit. So February is the month to do it. We do it all year long, but we take special time out in February to just give thanks and acknowledge those who came before us so that we are able to even have a radio show. You know, a lot of people gave their lives for this privilege that we have to be on Blog Talk Radio, just like anybody else can be on Blog Talk Radio. That did not always exist. And so for that, we are thankful at the, here at the International Black Summit. And in our conversation, we want to continue to acknowledge everybody we find out any little bit of information about, let us know. We acknowledge each other.
Glenn. You know, I want to go back to that the Children's March, because what that reminded me of is Soweto, when the uprising at the school and how the children were protesting and coming together and actually were, you know, when you look at it, young people are always at the forefront of these conversations. You know, we like to think that it's the older, the senior people and the adults and so forth who are inside of that conversation. But it really is the young people, the youth, and that youth energy that ends up sparking and galvanizing. Because it really is the young and the old together. That is the opportunity of moving ourselves forward. So, you know, I just want to just keep including that and including that it's not just a U.S. conversation. You know, when you look around the planet, it's a global conversation of freedom, of unity, of strength, of community. And that's who we are as a conversation, the International Black Summit. And we're looking to connect and to put together all of the pieces for us and for, you know, and for the world, really, when you look at what's possible and what can be created and what can we do to take things to the next level. So we've got about a minute and a half left. And anything you want to say in closing, Henrietta?
Well, just make sure celebrate Black History Month and just do some research, you know. But try to look up the children's march that took place in the state of Alabama, and I understand that other states joined in. Also, but there's a documentary on it, and but just enjoy Black History Month and just every day try to find out more information from somebody, even if you just ask someone to share a story with you. That helps.
I invite people to go seek out their elders and to find out their version or their conversation about what's occurring.
Okay.
So we've got about 30 seconds left. The International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We're here, as Henrietta said, every week. We're looking for opportunities for other shows to expand our network. Let us know. Get a hold of us. Go to the website and look up Henrietta Bird or Glenn Greenwich and find out what you can do to put your information, your material, your subject matter inside of our talk show network. With that, we love you. We honor you. We honor your spirit. Good night. God bless. and have a great week.
Good night.